Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Laura Spencer, and today for Steve Kraske. A new study out this week from the Thomas B. Fordham Institute asks, quote, when it comes to the elected leaders of the nation's 14,000 school districts, are board members critical players in enhancing student learning, harmless bystanders, or part of the problem? The study is titled, Does School Board Leadership Matter? And it argues that the answer would be yes, but according to the research, it not only matters who's on the board, but how they got there and what they consider important. Our guest today is Michael Petrilli. He's the Executive Vice President of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, Research Fellow at the Hoover Institution, and Executive Editor of Education Next. And Joe Robertson joins us. He is a longtime reporter for the Kansas City Star. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in today.
I'm glad to be here.
And you've covered education for a number of years. How long have you been with the Star?
Well, I've been with the Star since 2001, doing education part-time, then full-time since 2005.
Okay, terrific. Well, there have been many different things to cover. It seems like it's been keeping you really busy. Again, we're hoping to talk about this new study out from the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, but we're going to turn a little bit to specifically about Kansas City Public Schools. The school district currently has 9 members on its board of directors, and on Tuesday, April 8th, voters will go to the polls and determine who will take the 5 available seats on the board. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about when voters go to the polls, they'll notice that the school board seats are mostly divided into sub-districts. Do you know the history of that division, rather than more at-large seats, but having those specific sub-districts?
Yeah, that was done as an effort many years ago to a city that's doing the electing that is majority white. You have a school system that was becoming majority minority, and there was a lot of concern that they would not get representative members on the board reflecting the student enrollment. And so it was a civil rights kind of issue to try to get to keep it. And so they divided the district up into sub-districts, and people have to run out of the sub-districts, and they run in those sub-districts, and that kind of helps keep the makeup of the board representative.
Well, and then the school board is currently in the process of shifting from a 9 to a 7-member board, and part of that is due to redistricting. Is that right?
Well, and the study that you're going to be hearing about, it gets into a lot of this. Boards, you try to avoid politics. You try to avoid getting provincial and things like that. You need to be looking over the needs of all the students, and too many the fewer board members seems to work better is the idea.
Have you read this study? Is this something that you've...
I've looked a little bit at it, and I will, of course, defer to Michael on some of the details in that. I do have some things that I've noticed about boards over the years, and I guess I'll say something a little bit about the election that's going on now in the Kansas City Public Schools, and I think people will probably be mostly reassured in that a lot of the politics that have been in play in the past really are not evident. You have a group of candidates that seem to be running really individually. They have good educational backgrounds. They got strong community backgrounds. And that's what you want to see. Now, sometimes there are issues that need to be importantly that need to be addressed. But my experience has been that if you start having board members running as slates, that's usually a danger sign, because that means there's politics involved, there's agendas involved, and that has been the case in the past, but that's not what we're seeing here.
Well, and you talked about politics playing a role in the past, and the study does mention that can sometimes be, kind of a crippling factor for school boards. What has that been like in the past, and how is it different today?
Well, I think what happens is that if you have board members fighting over turfs, trying to hold control of certain things, or if there's a lot of lack of confidence in the administration, and so there's efforts underfoot maybe to undermine or try to bring in the different leadership. That's the kind of things that gets boards out of their what should be their primary mission, which is really just overseeing the services to the children.
Well, and school board elections in Kansas City are usually held in April, not at the same time as state or national elections. Missouri law also requires candidates to gather hundreds of signatures to get on the ballot, which can be challenging in the winter before January filing deadline. Any efforts that you know of to change this, to move that election to a kind of a more you know, an easier date for both voters and those candidates trying to be on the ballot.
Yeah, I mean, they like to have the you want bigger participation. It kind of helps the bigger the turnout, it avoids some of the political faction efforts to have more to take stronger root, I guess. Yeah, and you mentioned it is a hard job to get on the Kansas City School Board because that signature process is unique. There are many things that Kansas City School Board has that's unique to them. You know, the sub-districts is one, and also they have to get the signatures to get on the ballot. And they do that in the dead of winter, when it's the hardest time of the year, really.
And how many signatures does it require?
You have to get 250, I believe, to get into a sub-district and 500 to get at large. And you have to get many more signatures than that because they don't a lot of them don't count.
Sure.
And I guess it also these board members that were doing this, I think, should get some credit for either faith or persistence, because at the time they were doing this last December, there was the elected school board in Kansas City was a bit of an endangered species. There's been a lot of deep interest coming down from the commissioner's office, education commissioner's office, and elsewhere that was looking at Kansas City as an opportunity to really look at doing some dramatic public education reforms. And elected school board in some of the top scenarios was going to be replaced.
If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 816-235-2888. And again, what do you think your school board should be doing to ensure academic success? That's 816-235-2888. And we're speaking with Joe Robertson, who a reporter for the Kansas City Star, who covers education issues. We're joined by Mike Petrilli. He is the executive vice president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, and we've been talking a little bit about a new study out this week on school board leadership. And I wonder, the study has been described as the first large-scale effort to analyze board members and their capacity to effectively lead school districts. What was the incentive to kind of dig deep on this issue?
Well, this is a really important question in the research community, but also among practitioners. You know, we've got something like 80 or 90,000 school board members out there around the country, you know, these little democracies and 14,000 school districts. And the question is, what is the impact of these individual school board members on their schools and districts? You know, some people would argue that the only thing that matters in education is what happens inside the classroom. You know, the teachers are the most important factor, the curriculum. And by all means, that's where the rubber meets the road. But there's been a lot of interest in the governance of school systems. Certainly, you've had many of those debates there in Kansas City. And so we wanted to see can you find a connection between the behaviors and attitudes and characteristics of the school board members and student achievement? And the short answer is yes, actually, you can.
Could you describe a little bit the research process? It started with survey data from more than 400 school boards. Is that right?
Right. So this was several years ago. We teamed up with the National School Boards Association and ended up surveying something like 900 school board members. This is from over 400 districts. This was across the country, every state but Alaska, I believe. And we asked them a number of questions about their background, about some of their attitudes on education, you know, poll questions, those sorts of things. What do you think the priorities should be? How important is academic achievement versus other things? And then we matched those results with some information that we knew about the school districts where they were from. We were able to find out, for example, how much money are they spending per pupil in each of these school districts, or how much I'm sorry, I'm getting a little echo here on the line, but I'm going to keep trying. So how much money are they spending? How is the district performing? What are the standards in the states in these districts? And then we wanted to match up how well-informed were the school board members and when they talked about what was happening in their district with what we could see in the data themselves. So, for example, if people said that their school district was underfunded, well, was that true based on the information we have, at least compared to other school districts?
You're listening to Up to Date. I'm Laura Spencer, and we're taking a closer look at the makeup of school boards with our guest Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. We're also joined in the studio by Joe Robertson. He's a reporter for the Kansas City Star who covers education issues. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 816-235-2888. Mike, the researchers set out to answer four questions, including what characteristics of board members are associated with greater capacity. And could you define that term in this context, the term capacity?
Sure. So when we're talking about capacity here, we're talking about a couple different things. One is whether or not the school board members were focused on raising academic achievement. This might seem like a no-brainer, but that isn't necessarily the top priority of everybody in these seats. I mean, they may be worried about other aspects of student outcomes. They might be worried about helping friends and neighbors get jobs in the school system. Other parts of capacity included the amount of time that they spent working on the school board and any kind of training that they might have gotten to help them be more effective school board members.
And how much of an impact does a school board have on a district's academic performance compared to administration or teachers and the students?
Right. So we have to be real careful here. We were able to find some connections. It's all correlational. So that means that we can't prove that it's the school boards that are causing this. But what we were able to say was that districts that have school board members who prioritize academic achievement tend to have districts that do better than you'd expect them to do. Now, we also found, and this is interesting to your conversation you were having earlier, that school boards that are elected on cycle, so in regular elections like presidential elections, and those that are elected at large instead of in ward-based elections, they tend to see higher achievement than others.
Again, you're listening to Up to Date, and we have Jody on the line. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning. Hi. Yes, I just had a comment about the school board. I have two eighth graders who are in the district at Lincoln, and I think the best way to have a good board is to vote folks in who are willing to spend time in the classrooms. There's a huge disconnect with folks who make decisions and yet aren't really connected with the daily rhythm of the schools, I don't think.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jody, for your call. And Joe Robertson, I might bring you in to talk a little bit about board members and their past experience. I mean, have you noticed in the past or present that they do spend a lot of time in the classroom, or do you see them more outside in the community and also, you know, in the meetings?
I think they do recognize that it's part of their mission is to get in the classroom. Some do better than others. I think it really varies from board member to board member. In some cases, I think I do run across board members a lot in schools and in programs. I think they do a pretty good job trying to get out.
And Mike, I noticed in the study that the majority of the board members who responded to the survey did not have children who were in the district. I think it was over 60%. And was that a finding that you found unusual, or was that expected?
You know, that is a little bit surprising. I think partly that is about the age of the board members, that in some cases it's people who are a little bit older, and so their children are already grown or in college. It's as someone who has a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old right now, I can't imagine having the time to serve on a school board. I don't feel like I have the time to brush my teeth barely. So, you know, that may be a factor that parents with school-age kids are just so hectic today. The other finding, though, that was fascinating was this one about educators, that educators or former educators tend to be less informed about the district in terms of its performance, in terms of its funding, than non-educators. And that was really surprising. And I think that's partly because the belief within the education system has always been that, look, we're not getting enough funding, or the expectations we're being held to account for are too high. I think maybe some people outside of education come at that with a different perspective and understand that, you know, in any line of work, whether you're in the private sector, public sector, nonprofits, no organization ever feels like it has enough money, always feels stressed out about meeting expectations. That's not unique to education. They may have a more balanced perspective there.
Yeah, and that was surprising, because I think you would assume that someone with a background in public education might have a better knowledge of the district. And Joe Robertson, at the current board makeup of the Kansas City Public Schools, do the board members have a background in education, or is it a kind of a diverse array of backgrounds?
I think it goes in cycles. I think, but right now you do have a... I'm just trying to run through my mind here, but I think there are a lot of parents. There, you do have people who either had children in the district, or you have some that are going to have children in the district. You know, so that, I think there is a very strong parent influence right now on the Kansas City School Board.
Well, and as a parent personally, I know that folks who are on the board of my son's school, many of them have had children at the school in the past, but have continued that association with the school.
So I should add that you have a mix, though, too, because mm-hmm. you have some former principals mm-hmm. on that same school board. So there is a mix right now.
Again, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking about school board leadership. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 816-235-2888. And, Mike, one of the challenges cited in the report is that some boards are too set in their ways. What are some alternatives to staying kind of set in kind of the way things have always gone?
Well, you know, in Kansas City, of course, you've gone through all kinds of changes recently, and you know, with shrinking the size of the district and the number of schools, with growing numbers of charter schools, those are some of the changes that we see around the country. Also, big issues for school boards to deal with: how do they interact with the teacher unions, and do they push hard for contracts that would allow school administrators to hire really good people, to have a choice about who they hire, and to take action if there's somebody who wasn't a good fit or who has burned out and needs to find another line of work? Are they able to do that in a reasonable amount of time? I mean, those are the sorts of things. And what happens with some of these school boards is that when they get elected off cycle, as is going to happen here in Kansas City, the worry is that so few people turn out to these elections that the people who do turn out are the ones that have the strongest personal interest in it. The teachers turn out, the teachers' families turn out. Some of the political allies of the unions turn out, and as a result, they can have an outsized influence on the school board and end up electing people who are not going to actually bargain very aggressively with them when they sit down to negotiate a new contract.
Well, we talked, Joe Robertson and I talked a little bit about this earlier, about politics, and the study found a correlation between a board member's political ideology, conservative, moderate, or liberal, and their focus as a school board member. Could you talk a little bit about some of the differences based on how these board members identified politically?
Yeah, you know, this was fascinating. What we found was that it was the political moderates who were the ones who were best informed about their own local school board. The conservatives tended to think that regardless of the situation around financing, they refused to believe that their own school district might be underfunded. And liberals, you wouldn't be surprised to know, had the opposite belief on funding, for example, that even in some districts that were pretty generously funded, saying that that there still wasn't enough money. And that may reflect ideology more than anything else. But on a variety of issues, it seemed like the moderates were just a little bit better informed. Yeah, it's interesting that, 100 years ago, when the progressive movement pushed for school boards in the first place, the idea was that these school boards would be apolitical, that you'd get the best and brightest from the city, kind of a blue ribbon group of people who were above politics, to run for the school board and to oversee the public schools and keep the politics out of it. You know, at the time, the machine politics were in place in a lot of cities. And now what we see is that the school boards themselves have become extremely political. And as I mentioned before, you have interest groups that try to get people elected, but you also have ideological factions who push hard to get, strong conservatives or strong liberals elected. And yet it appears that those moderates, that may be those sort of good government, above the fray moderates, may be the ones who are best positioned to give, take control of the schools and to have a real community perspective.
Now, Joe Robertson, you talked about a little bit about this earlier. We have an election coming up on April 8th. Do you think there's a slate of candidates coming up for this next election in the school board?
Well, as I was saying, I think that right now, I think it would be refreshing to people in Kansas City that you don't see this political divisions going on. So because that has been a hardship in the past. And, most recently there was a big division over when this district was going through school closings, and they lined up that way. I think sometimes school boards now also offer on the defensive. I mean, they are a lot of reform ideas coming in, and I think school boards sometimes are fighting for their lives, and I think they are feeling as if they're being attacked. It is a job that you'll feel attacked. I mean, I would tell you, the first comment I always hear sometimes after stories and things is, well, the first thing you need to do is get rid of that school board. So, and there's a lot of people working that way. They are on the defensive a lot, I think.
That was Joe Robertson from the Kansas City Star. And we're also joined by Michael Petrilli, the executive vice president of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation. I'm Laura Spencer, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Laura Spencer in for Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. And we are talking about school board leadership. A new study is out this week, and we'd like to hear from you. Voters, tell us how you pick school board members when you're at the polls. Is it political affiliation, gender, or past experience? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. And Michael Petrilli is the Executive Vice President of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. He's here with us on the line. Thanks, Michael, for staying with us.
It's great to be here.
Also, Joe Robertson from the Kansas City Star, who covers education. Mike, I was just curious, are there districts that you found in the research with other systems in place, not with school boards?
Sure. You know, this is a big topic of conversation in the reform community. A lot of people are ready to give up on school boards. As Joe said, a lot of frustration that they haven't been willing to move faster on reform, or that they end up playing politics, or in some cases that they have not provided the oversight on finances that we've needed. Of course, in Kansas City, there's been a big proposal recently from the Indianapolis-based Seed Trust that was sponsored by the State Department of Education to make major changes in Kansas City. I believe, including some of the governance pieces. I mean, the worry here is that in a lot of places we have school boards and their district central offices that end up micromanaging individual schools. A lot of people think, look, we got to get those groups out of the way, let educators and innovators do their thing.
Joe,
and so what you see in some places then is a move towards, different arrangements, more charter-like arrangements, and also, of course, giving control over to mayors as an alternative to school boards.
Joe, I wanted to see if you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, on your study, I was curious. We have a lot of pressure on the Kansas City School Board, and then the Hickman Mills School Board has been coming under a lot of pressure lately. And these are districts that are, high poverty composition. And you don't hear, as many, when you get out into the suburban districts, everyone generally seems to be more kind of cool with their elected school board and that whole process. It was when the district comes under pressure, it seems, that they start looking at the school board. And I'm just wondering how much of that is warranted, how much of that is unfair.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. I think, part of it comes down to how are we judging schools? Are we grading them fairly? If we are looking at progress over time, do schools help kids make progress on tests, for example, from September until June? Do they do a better job over time on graduation rates, things like that? If we look at progress, then even those high poverty districts should be able to show that they're doing a good job, if they are, in fact, doing a good job. But it certainly is unfair to just look at their regular test scores, because we know those are so connected to students' backgrounds that they're coming into schools with.
It seems like over the last few decades, there's been a lot of discussion about the relevance of school boards. Has that changed, or at least the perception of relevance?
Now, that is still a real debate. And like Joe said, they are fighting for their lives. I mean, there's definitely many people in the reform community, many policymakers that would be happy to just get rid of school boards and say, they are in many ways, they align themselves with the status quo, with the interests of the people who work in the system instead of the interests of the kids and the families. And so there's a lot of frustration about them. And you certainly see in some cities, and Kansas City is one of them, where, more and more kids are in charter schools, which, of course, are not overseen by these public school boards. Whatever we say as we debate this talk, it's happening. It's already happening that the school boards are losing some of the influence that they used to have.
Joe?
Yeah, and then the issue is the school boards are supposed to be apolitical. That's the ideals that, that there's... But it seems to me also that this is getting to be – it's getting harder and harder not to be political in education. I mean, as an education reporter, that the politics around the Common Core, the school choice movements and all these things and vouchers, and the temperature just keeps rising, and you almost have to almost take sides, it seems. So I think it's a really difficult environment.
Michael, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Look, I mean, this is not a time when people are generally happy with let's just keep doing what we're doing. I mean, there's real interest in significant change, as there needs to be. I mean, you look at performance in a place like Kansas City, and it's tragic. We need to do a much better job helping young people get ready for what's next. And so there is that sense of urgency. It's also the truth that the states haven't been just twiddling their thumbs. I mean, increasingly they have taken over many of the roles that used to take place at the local level, for better or for worse. That's partly by setting standards and the testing and the accountability. It's also over issues like educator evaluations. I think the states are frustrated that local school boards aren't moving fast enough, especially in the toughest districts. And so they've said, look, if you're not going to do it, we're going to do it. And so over time, what you've seen is that school board members, they really have lost a lot of their power. They've lost it as it has flowed upwards towards the state. And they've also lost it as there's been now more competition from charter schools that they don't control.
Well, going back to the study, one of the phrases that comes up is beat the odds. And could you talk a little bit about what that means in the study?
Sure. What we tried to do was to find districts that were getting higher student achievement results than you would predict based on their demographics and based on the school spending. So we know that low-income areas tend to score much lower on standardized tests for a variety of reasons. We know that going back 5 years. A lot of what we're trying to do in education reform is to sever that link to make it possible for kids to do a lot better. But, to try to do an apples-to-apples comparison with these districts all over the country, each of them taking different tests, that's how we looked at it, was based on the districts that beat the odds are ones that get significantly higher test scores than you would predict based on the demographics of the kids.
Let's go to a call. Don joins us from North Kansas City. Good morning, Don.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Don. You are on the line on Up to Date.
Hi there. A very interesting topic, and I was just very interested in the survey itself, if in fact the survey got into getting some data that would say we have an awful lot of school boards that spend a lot of time on policy, on goals and everything, but then ignored the balancing act of how you develop operational plans to actually execute those in the schools with the teachers, with the students, with the parents. And so is there an imbalance between setting a policy that you can't reach versus having a good balance? And what's the difference between school districts?
Okay. Mike Petrilli, yeah. Do you have a response?
Great question. We get into that a little bit. I mean, trying to figure out what is the role of the school board, and do they see themselves as mostly setting policy, kind of big picture stuff, or do they try to get into some of the nitty gritty? Now, I'll admit our own view is that we mostly want them to stay at that policy level, that most of the time school boards get into trouble when they try to micromanage. That really is supposed to be the job of the managers, of the superintendent and his or her staff, and then the folks at the school level. You don't necessarily want school board members getting into their business on a lot of these issues, but you do need to find a way, that they need to hire people who can translate the policy and the direction and the strategy into action plans, into operational plans, and get the job done. And it's certainly true that in too many of our school districts, that just isn't happening.
You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. What do you think your school board should be doing to ensure academic success? Dave in Overland Park wrote us to ask, what's the purpose of state school boards vis-a-vis local boards, and do they help or hinder?
Great question. The states, almost every state does have a state board of education, and they too are supposed to play a policymaking role. In this case, what generally happens is legislators pass a law. So in the Missouri legislature in Jefferson City, they say they pass a law that says, okay, we're going to allow for charter schools. And then they ask the state board of education to flesh that out, to flesh out the regulations, to get more into the specifics on how that's actually going to work. And that would be the role of the state board. But I will say, these governance arrangements, they go back 100 years, and they don't always make a ton of sense. What ends up happening is you have a lot of cooks in the kitchen on education. You've got the governors, you've got legislators, you've got the state board, you've got the local board, you've got those principals, you've got the teachers. It is very hard to get all of those folks sort of rowing in the same direction instead of just fighting each other all the time.
Now, Joe Robertson, would you want to chime in with a quick update about the State Board of Education and its relationship with the Kansas City Public Schools?
When you talk about cooks in the kitchen, we are seeing that right now. We have a situation, of course, with the transfer law that has been a problem. Where it allows students in unaccredited school districts to go to a neighboring school district at the cost of the unaccredited school district, and that has been a financial disaster over in the St. Louis area with Normandy and Riverview Gardens. Kansas City's not seeing that right now. But it could be. Because depending on what happens with the Kansas City Public Schools, and you have the state board trying to listen to actually the commissioner's office, the State Department of Education, is trying to come up with ideas. Meanwhile, you have a legislature that is just throwing bills and stacking bills, and they're long and they're complicated, and everyone's trying to get in with their own ideas about education, and sorting this out, I will tell you, is extremely difficult. And this is a process that it's hard to imagine what's going to come out of it, because it's such a soup right now.
Well, Kansas City Public Schools lost its accreditation in 2012. Mike Petrelli, did the study take into account schools that were accredited or provisionally accredited or did full accreditation? Was that something that was listed as part of the study?
We did not look at that. And I'll be honest, that's because it is so rare for a school district to lose accreditation, as you probably know. So what happened in Kansas City means that, it really means that Kansas City had hit the, rock bottom there, because almost every school district in the country is accredited.
And Joe, the district is hoping to regain its provisional accreditation later this year. Do you have thoughts about where that's going? Or
well, I'll tell you that a year ago at this time they were unaccredited, and they were the state metrics that were at that time showed them to be very far away from being even provisional. And they were going through a process, working with a state team, and they're making reports, and they were saying they were making some big improvements. And some of it was academic, but not really. Most of it was some of the other areas around supports for that. And it bore out. When the state report card came out last August, they had scored as where they thought they were. And so now the commissioner said if they can do that again, she will recommend the provisional, and they are projecting again. So now they still have the test. The important tests still have to be taken here this spring. But their predictive tests that they use to kind of see how they're doing are saying that they think they will get there again. So we'll see. But they did perform the way they thought they would last year. So they're feeling good about it right now.
You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. Have you considered running for your school board? Or are you a current school board member? We'd like to hear from you. Again, it's 816-235-2888. Joe, did you want to chime in?
Well, I had a scenario here that I want to kind of run by Michael real quick. See, sometimes in the Kansas City Public Schools elections, school board elections, there's been low participation. There's been seats that ran unopposed. They had to do some runoff elections sometimes. But I mean, write-in ballots, because they didn't have people running. And the district, it's been kind of equated with the problems in the district. Well, we have a district that I'm familiar with. I actually am a patron of that district, but it's the Center School District, which is a small district, but it has a high minority population, a lot of poverty that they deal with. And it's been a very successful district. And when their school board election time comes around, whoever was on the board, if someone's stepping down, they kind of set up and they kind of almost like appoint someone almost, but not really. I mean, they run, but they run unopposed. But it's been always very smooth. They haven't had elections lately because someone just steps in and fills the position after someone leaves, and they have lost ability in the board, and they don't have a whole lot of people vying for the position. And mm-hmm. So I don't know what usually is the indications of a active and effective board environment.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, look, we know from a lot of literature on nonprofit boards that is how nonprofit boards are supposed to work, is that they have a strong collegial attitude and a good sense of, of working together. And then if somebody is ready to step down, they recruit somebody who would also be a good fit for the board, which means they're also going to work well with the board. They might fill an important seat in terms of expertise or representation. So we have this tradition in public education that says, no, we need to do this with these very local democracies. It can work okay, but it can also easily be captured by people who, again, have real special interests with the schools. And so, in my own opinion, what we need to do is whatever's best for kids. And if you can run a school board in a way that's more collegial and that doesn't require a lot of politicking and that's good for kids, hey, I'm for it.
Again, we're talking today about a new study out from the Thomas B. Fordham Institute examining school board leadership, and you can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. And Catherine is on the line from Warrensburg. Good morning, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. Thanks for calling.
Our school district, we have some good teachers here, and we have some very poor teachers. I have three children in the district that range in age from high school down to the primary grades. And I've noticed that the school board here, I don't think they really do much to address performance of teachers in the classroom. do you think it should be the school board's job to make teachers accountable for results in the classroom?
Okay, thanks for your question, Catherine.
You know, it's a great question. The school board can't directly do that very easily. Again, we don't want them to be managing the schools, but they can certainly create an environment where it's possible. I mean, it is the school board in the end that that negotiates with the teacher unions over their contracts, that may agree to provisions that make it really hard to hold teachers accountable. So they need to not do that, and they need to have an expectation with the staff, with the superintendent on down, that, you know, we expect excellence in this district. We expect that from everybody in the district. And if somebody is not meeting that mark, we expect you to do something about it.
Well, Mike, in the study, it states that a district's success academically is related to the board members' focus on the improvement of academics. How much does do the teachers play in looking at academics?
Well, sure. I mean, we know from tons of research that teacher effectiveness is a huge factor. And of all the things schools can control, probably the biggest factor in terms of achievement. I mean, as the caller said, you can have a great teacher right next to a pretty lousy teacher. It actually happens all the time in the same school. And they can be getting dramatically different results, with one teacher helping kids make huge progress over the course of the year, and another teacher might actually be hurting the kids academically. So, you know, that is a big factor, and there's definitely a role here for school boards to pay attention to that and to say, hey, do we have good systems in place to evaluate teachers, also to support teachers, help them develop, and is it possible for principals to remove teachers from the classroom if that needs to be the case? Is it the expectation that principals do that? That's part of their job. They are managers, and they need to have high expectations. And you know, as with any line of work, there's going to be some people who, for whatever reason, just don't meet those expectations and need to find something else to do.
We have a comment from Kristen. She says the challenges and roles of school boards are not homogenous. The issues facing the KCMO versus Shawnee Mission versus Olathe School District are vastly different, as are those for the rural districts of Kansas and Missouri. What is not, however, varied is the role of our elected state legislators and what options exist for local school boards when it comes to facing salient issues. Joe Robertson, do you have thoughts about that? It's kind of suburban, urban, rural, just thoughts on kind of different.
Right. Well, one thing I think we are starting to merge, though. I mean, the differences between the Shawnee Mission School District and the Kansas City, Missouri School District aren't, I think, as stark as they used to be. I think we've been watching the increase of minority and poverty pockets. I mean, it is reaching out. I mean, I think every school district now in the area is having to deal with a lot of the similar issues that they weren't maybe 5, even 10 years ago.
Mike Petrelli, would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly true that our schools and school districts come in lots of different shapes and sizes and face different challenges. I mean, you've got of the 14,000 school districts out there, you know, you've got quite a few that serve a few hundred kids in, you know, one or two schools. And then you've got New York City public schools serving a million kids. So, you know, there is a lot of variety for sure. And it's right that the states are the ones that are supposed to have this broader view. The trick is, you know, how do you as a state policymaker deal with problems that you see at the local level? And what we see too many times, I think, is they try to come up with a solution that maybe it's a good fit for Kansas City, but it's not a good fit for these suburbs. But they make it apply to everybody. And that just gets you in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah, you end up with bills that are 30 pages long, and nobody can, and they can't agree, and they don't get out of the committees. I mean, it's too hard.
Mike, we had someone write that it almost sounds like school board members should be professional managers. Is there a place for a concerned amateur?
Yeah, there is a place for a concerned amateur, absolutely. And I want to be clear about that. These folks should not be managing the day-to-day work of schools, and in fact get in trouble when they try to do that. These are meant to be lay boards overseeing the general policy. Now, truth is, it takes a lot of time to be on a school board and to do that job well, particularly of a big district. And so that's something you got to know going in. You hear these stories about these meetings going on all night and committee meetings going on all night. This is a big commitment. And that may be one reason why it's hard in some places to get great people to run is that, you know, it's a huge time suck, and so you got to be very, very committed.
I think it's also the time you spend taking phone calls from concerned parents, teachers. I think school boards, a lot of their time is spent just having to try to deal with angry or upset constituents.
And we have time for just one last question. Mike, what do you think voters should keep top of mind when school board members are on the ballot? We've got an election coming up April 8th. Any final thoughts?
Sure. I mean, you want to hear them talk about academic performance. You want to hear them talk about getting kids ready for what comes next, college, career, being able to succeed in life. If they're not talking about those core issues, something's wrong. And you're likely to get what they promise. In other words, if they promise higher academic achievement, you have some chance that that's what they're going to deliver.
Mike Petrilli, he is with the Thomas B. Fordham Institute and joined us from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me on, Laura.
Also, Joe Robertson with the Kansas City Star. Thank you for coming in.
Glad to be here. Thanks.